Sydney Festival has become an integral part of the Sydney performing arts scene, and for transparency, I should declare that I am a board member of the festival. But in his first year as artistic director, Wesley Enoch has seen audience attendances rise by 150,000 as people attended 150 events across 46 venues, and he is hoping to draw on this success as he plans for 2018. Wesley Enoch joins me now. Wesley, welcome to Speaking Out.
Thanks for having me, Larissa.
Now, 2017 was your first year as artistic director. How was the experience?
Well, look, it's like you're jumping out of a plane. You know you've got a parachute, but you've got a free fall for a long time. And you start to go, okay, how far can I go? And it's really about tolerance. There's a certain level of excitement around a festival. It's like taking a whole year's worth of activity in what I would normally do as a theatre company or whatever, and condensing it down into that 1 month. And it was the most amazing thing. In fact, I felt the most elated I ever have. You know, the kind of ecstasy you get from exhaustion? That's what I was feeling for that month.
Now, I really want to talk about the festival in 2018, but I thought one of the most significant events of the festival was the ceremony you created for the 26th of January, which really challenged the whole conversation around Australia Day, Invasion Day. Mm. Just tell us a little bit about the ceremony that you did at Barangaroo in Eora language and what you were hoping to start the conversation about.
Well, my thing is, if we're going to have a national day, and I should just say, you know, Australia Day, the 26th of January, is a relatively new thing. It's only been since 1994 that we legislated that it had to happen on that day. Until then, it was just a long weekend at the end of January. And so we lack rituals around it. We lack a sense of reflection and understanding of what a national day should be. So for me, what we did was we commissioned from Jacinta Tobin and Nadi Simpson. We brought them together and we commissioned a new song. So at the morning ceremony down at Barangaroo, they sang this song with about 300 people from community choirs that we taught the song to. And this song was about saying, what is our history? Where do we come from? What are the hardships in our history? And it was interesting, the tears as these people from community choirs were singing this song, because they understood that, yes, they were singing languages, Eora language, a language of the Sydney area, but the meaning of it was so impactful for them. There were tears rolling in their eyes while they're smiling, a sense of pride that they had learnt something about the language, about what it means to be in this country. And I think that's what we need more of. Wherever the day moves, be it the 26th of January or any other day, Australia Day needs to acknowledge the long millennia's of Indigenous occupation of this country and custodianship of this country. And we need to find ways of starting the day remembering that, and that all the waves of migration that have come since then need to tap into what this energy is of our first peoples.
Now, of course, Festival 2018 has a very strong Indigenous program, and I want to ask you about that in a moment. But just as you start to look ahead towards the festival, what are some of the, I mean, it's a bit like asking who are your favourite children, but what are some of the things that you might just flag for people to have a look at, to consider?
I think people need to look at My Name is Jimmy Barney, who played Eddie Mabo in the TV series of Mabo. He and his family are on stage looking at cultural continuity, looking at language, song, storytelling, going back to their forebears. Oh, I should just say this, that about 2 years ago now, Jimmy Barney's father passed away and Jimmy became the hereditary chief of his island. And as part of that, he goes, well, what's my storytelling? How do I pass on story to the next generation? So on stage is his grandmother, his mother, two brothers and his son. And they tell the story of their island from the Torres Strait, learning about language, passing on information, passing on cultural knowledge. And you start to witness that as an audience. And that's really quite powerful. And I guess another story about passing on knowledge is 4,000 Fish, which, working with Emily McDaniel, who's a fantastic curator, artist, and she's bringing together a team of people down at Barangaroo looking at, well, the early days of the colony. There was a day where they netted 4,000 fish, more than they could even eat or preserve, and they dumped them on the different Aboriginal men that they knew. And Barangaroo, the woman, was incredibly incensed by this because it did two things. Number one, it broke the female economy of fishing, where women would fish and provide fish for their families. But it also did something where it stole from the future a feed. You know, it took fish when you didn't need to, so that in the future there were fewer fish. And this whole sense of an installation we're doing down at Barangaroo, inviting Sydneysiders or visitors to Sydney to come down to the harbour to take water from the harbour, freeze it into the shape of a fish, and then to bring that frozen shape to a nawi, a canoe that we're making, and letting that fish melt back into the water, if you like, to return the 4,000 fish that were taken unnecessarily. Number one, a story about Barangaroo. Number two, a story of overconsumption, but also the sense of looking after and connecting to our environment, which I think is important as well.
I just want to pick up on that theme of overconsumption, because there seems to be a bit of a thematic through the festival around sustainability in the broader programming. Can you tell us a little bit about how that theme runs through several of the festival events?
Yeah, I should say that I don't seek a theme. A theme kind of arrives. Mm. I believe that artists are kind of osmotically related to their community. They are listening to their community and bringing stories to the fore, because that's what artists do. And there seems to be lots of stories around sustainability, about recycling, or about how we live in our environment. One of the pieces that we're looking at is from an artist called Hiroshi Fuji, who comes from Japan. It's called Jurassic Plastic, which is looking at repurposing and recycling and using creativity to give new energy to discarded and broken toys. And as we're coming through Christmas, and we know that there's often a lot of stuff that goes through toys. It's not even the things you purchase. It's the things that just happen. Like the McHappy Meal toy. It's interesting because we went to St. Vincent de Paul, and within, I think it was a week, we received 9 cubic meters of toys that could not be resold or recycled.
Wow.
9 cubic meters of things that get thrown out. And these McHappy Meal things are everywhere. Things that no one really wants. And so the installation Jurassic Plastic is looking at that. We've also got Alana Mitchell, who comes from Canada. She's a science journalist, if you like, and she's got a piece called Seasick, looking at the health of our waterways, the health of our oceans. So there's lots of stories like that.
And I guess the other aspect of the Indigenous program that was incredibly popular last year and is coming back this year is the languages program.
Yeah. Within 2 weeks of us announcing that we're doing the languages program, last year it sold out. It was full as a gug. And so we've expanded that. So there's lots more room for people to get involved, learn language, understand a little bit more about the local landscape. I have this belief that if you understand the language of a landscape, a place, you understand a little bit more of that connection. The sense of, I know you might be like this when you travel to, say, Japan. Once you understand how the language is formed, you go, oh, that's how the culture sits together. You know, there's a deep respect for metaphor in Japanese language. You go, oh, that's interesting. Similarly here in Australia. But also this notion of, if you can name the places that are around you, that they have a maybe onomatopoeic, or they have a deep kind of meaning to you, and you can just trace the meaning of words. So like Parramatta, you go, that's a colonial understanding of Baramara, the eel. And so you start to go, oh, that's interesting. Or Camaray, in terms of the people of the Camaraygal. And you start to realize where our words come from, and you get a deeper understanding of where you come from. And I think language is a very potent tool to understand culture.
We've just brushed across the tip of the Indigenous content of the program. Oh, yeah. Can you just give us a couple of more highlights?
Oh, fantastic things. There's a fantastic work by Jinoa Gila, who's looking at her one-person show called My Uruwai, which will be fun. There's also a photographic exhibition up at the University of New South Wales Galleries in Paddington about Tell, some of the best Indigenous photographers. And also this program that we're calling the Blackout Program. Last year we called it the Indigenous Program. In next year's festival we're calling it the Blackout Program, as a sense of saying a blackout is when there's a whole lot of blackfellas together. And within that is also some interesting artists from First Nations New Zealand, First Nations Canada, that we're bringing together to talk about things. Heaps of things in the brochure on the website, so hopefully people can get into it.
Well, this is our last show for the year, and I know that you travel widely around Australia and internationally looking at works for the festival. In terms of Australian work, what's been a highlight this year?
Yeah, one of the shows that we were able to get into the Sydney Festival was a show called Backbone by a company called Gravity and Other Myths out of South Australia. And when I saw it, it was amazing. A physical theatre work, a circus work, if you like. And this is the thing, around the world, Australia is noted for its circus. Like, I would say 3 of the top 10 circus shows doing the rounds at the moment are all Australian. We absolutely punch above our weight in that way. and this show, Backbone, which is a really beautiful, beautiful work, which looks at risk, the idea of how working together can give you moral fortitude as well, the idea of backbone, both in its physical strength, but also its moral strength. And if anything, it's a commentary, not directly, but it's a commentary very much on what's going on in our country at the moment, where we may lack a bit of backbone about the things we do. So that'll be out at Parramatta at the Riverside Theatres. And another show, almost the exact opposite in many ways, is a show called Wild Boar. Three fantastic artists, female artists, who each have a very solo practice, have come together. And I should say the first maybe 10 minutes of the show is where they have bare buttocks on a table, and they're reciting the reviews of their previous work and basically looking at how female artists are infantilized a lot and told, you know, that they aren't as good as male artists, or even by omission, not talked about. And they have this fantastic show, which is like so much laughter. I have not laughed in so much. And yet there's a deep, deep kind of political line through it, where you start to go, oh yeah, what are female artists doing? How are they constructing their work, and how is it being received by others? And how are, in fact, male reviewers looking at the work of these female artists? And if anything, that's very topical today as well.
You mentioned we punch above our weight internationally around circus, and obviously you've been travelling the world to festivals and looking at other performing arts offerings. Are there other areas where we punch above our weight?
Well, it's interesting, in Australia, we underappreciate our First Nations storytelling. And yet, when you go to film festivals, when you go to theatre festivals, we are regarded, in terms of First Nations, as real leaders. Often, I think Indigenous arts used, as Bobby Merritt used to say, the stamp on the envelope. We're not thought of as the content of the envelope. We're thought of as this little thing on the corner that helps us travel. But in fact, Australia is thought of very highly in terms of its First Nation storytelling. And it's the thing that is often touring around. And yet in this country, we don't appreciate it enough.
You've been an active advocate and commentator on issues related quite broadly to Australia's cultural life. How do you think the performing arts could be better supported in Australia?
Look, it's interesting. I think often we go to funding and think money will solve everything. And yes, yes, there are funding, there's a box office, there's philanthropy, there's sponsorship that we could all do better in. But in fact, what we're missing at the moment is the pathway. When you have a talented, interesting artist, how are they brought through in a pathway? And what's happened over the last 15 years, let's say, maybe 20 years, is that the middle ground has disappeared. So now, instead of being able to walk across the river because there's a bridge, we now have to jump from stone to stone, and we lose a lot of people. People fall into that river and get washed away, or they go, oh, is it worth the risk? And I can't do it. And I think the nation is missing out on some very interesting talent because we don't know how to show them a pathway through from one side to another. And if you like, there's a huge investment in people like me. You know, I've had a very blessed career, but who are the next generation coming through? And we're not finding the way to support them. So yes, money is part of the answer, but in fact, it's saying to audiences, how do you identify a talent and follow them and support them? Not in that kind of, you know, oh, there's a star, I better follow the star, but also saying, oh, I'm interested in them. How do I support their career, both by maybe a philanthropic gift, or maybe helping them out with a venue for their work, or buying some of their work if they're a visual artist? How do you help people along the way? Because those pathways are becoming fewer and fewer.
I just want to pick up on a couple of observations you made. Obviously, funding's been cut in a range of areas across the arts, including the performing arts. Philanthropy is becoming much more of a focus for performing arts companies and the arts in general. Do you think this greater reliance on philanthropy is an additional burden for companies as they have to go out and chase that philanthropy dollar? Or is it actually an opportunity?
Oh, look, it's a bit of both. I mean, you have to have deep relationship with philanthropists. It's interesting, like a body like GetUp, which, you know, it's often $10, $20 donations that actually make the difference because they come in large numbers. Philanthropists will often give, you know, quite considerable amounts of money to support an artist or a company or a festival in our case. And you do have to service that. the expectation, it's interesting, the Venice Biennale conversation recently has been very interesting for me, where like Tracy Moffat was chosen and she was at the Venice Biennale just gone, and the Australia Council is now doing a different process, and I go, oh, okay. But philanthropists are a little unhappy with that because they lose a little authority over the selection of the artist to go to the Venice Biennale. And that's sometimes what we're seeing. Philanthropists looking for more responsibility, them giving more authority to their voice because they are contributing financially. And often, still, the public dollars are the greater to the philanthropist's offering, but they're wanting, because it's their money, they want some say over it. And the biggest challenge for any philanthropist is to give, the true meaning of philanthropy is for the love of the people, to say, I give because of the love of the people, not necessarily because I want to have control, or I want recognition, or I want to aggrandize myself. And that's the greatest challenge I'm seeing it going into the future. How do philanthropists give and give over authority to artists to sometimes bite the hand that feeds them? You know, like when you think about the Sydney Biennale a couple of years ago with the Transfield connection, philanthropy versus sponsorship, there's all that there. But people saying, I don't, you know, can we take that money? That money is soiled. Or is there any such thing as clean money for Indigenous artists? You know, what happens? Do we take mining money? Do we take alcohol sponsorship? You know, where do we sit in that kind of moral structure? And then how do philanthropists insert themselves or assert themselves over our moral structures and moral decisions? It's a much bigger topic to talk about, but I think it's something that as we go forward and governments want to step back from giving money and philanthropists are encouraged to step in, how do we see this authority relationship going forward? It'll be very exciting.
Well, Sydney Festival is most of January and you are hurtling towards that. Surely you must get New Year's Eve off though. How are you spending New Year's Eve?
I'm spending New Year's Eve, as I have done for many years, with my friends and my partner. I'm an old-fashioned person. I think the way you spend the first day of the new year, it gives you strength, gives you a way of thinking about that whole year to come. And that's why in some respects I call the Sydney Festival the country's cultural New Year's resolution, to say, I'm going to be a better person, I'm going to get involved, I'm going to spend more time with my friends and family, and I want to engage in debate and discussion around the arts.
Well, you won't be getting much of a break before the festival, but are you taking one after the festival's over? And what do you do when you take a break, Wesley?
I'm not good at a holiday, I must admit. holiday's not my thing.
I would have guessed that about you.
As soon as the festival finishes on the 28th, we've got a one day of cleanup and then I'm off to Canada. There's a big festival, the Push Festival in Vancouver, and especially around some of the First Nations work there. So I'm going to go off and do that straight away. And then I come back and then I bought a house on Stradbroke Island, which is where my family come from, the Minjilaba. And it's just near the cemetery my father's buried in. And I'm going to go spend a week on Stradbroke because the more I travel, the more I live in Sydney, the more I have this hunger to sit on country and just to listen to the countryside again.
Well, we wish you all the best with that and also all the best with the festival.
Thanks, Larissa.
That was Artistic Director of Sydney Festival, the fabulous Wesley Enoch.